Imagine a weapon. But I want you to strip away the image of cold steel.
Right.
Forget about guidance chips or gunpowder. And definitely forget about anything that explodes in a mushroom cloud.
No, this is entirely different.
Exactly. Instead, I want you to picture a URL, specifically a domain that went live really quietly this past February, February 2026.
Just a few weeks ago.
Yeah. And the source material we're digging into today, it describes the launch of freedom.gov not as some routine website update, but literally as the cyber equivalent of deploying ballistic missiles across the world's digital borders.
It's a very vivid image, isn't it?
It really is.
And looking at the Tech and Analysis report, which is our primary source today, I mean, it is not hyperbole. The authors are treating this as a defining moment in geopolitical history.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive, everyone. Today, we are unpacking a story that, honestly, it feels like it belongs in a cyberpunk novel.
Yeah, science fiction stuff.
But it's a very real, very urgent analysis of the U.S. State Department's latest project. We're talking about freedom.gov. And, you know, on the surface, this looks like a standard transparency initiative, right?
Very standard.
You go to the site, it's clean, blue, and white, very, very democracy.
Right. It looks incredibly benevolent. It's got the eagle, the flags, all the rhetoric you'd expect about, you know, connecting the world and universal access.
Mm.
But our deep dive today is based on this report that performs what they actually call a ruthless autopsy on the project.
A ruthless autopsy. I love that phrasing.
Yeah, and their conclusion is that we need to stop looking at the user interface entirely and start looking at the code, because what they found underneath that friendly exterior, well, it's going to fundamentally change how you understand the internet today.
I have to admit, when I first grabbed this report, I was thinking, okay, another soft power play, you know, another Voice of America broadcast for the digital age.
That was the general consensus when it launched?
Right. But the deeper I got, the more I realized this isn't about broadcasting content at all. This is about infrastructure. The report uses a term that completely stopped me in my tracks: algorithmic diplomacy.
That is the core concept we really need to wrap our heads around today.
Let's do it.
For the last century, we measured a superpower's strength by tangible things, right? Aircraft carriers, trade deficits, economic sanctions.
Physical leverage.
Exactly. But in 2026, this report argues that a hegemon's power is now measured by the ability of its algorithms to penetrate independent global networks.
So it's the difference between, say, knocking on a locked door with a battering ram and just inventing a ghost that can walk right through the wall.
That is a surprisingly accurate analogy. It's all about permeability. It's a question of whether your borders can actually stop data or if the data just flows right through them like they aren't even there.
Well, let's get into the mechanics of this ghost then.
Mm-hmm.
The report distinguishes heavily between the presentation layer and the architecture.
Yeah.
And we touched on the presentation. The buzzwords: information freedom, digital human rights. It's marketed to you as a tool to help people in restrictive regimes access the truth. Sounds great.
And that is the wolf in sheep's clothing aspect that the analysts at the Tech and Command Center highlight. They have this golden rule throughout the report: never trust the user interface.
Never trust the UI.
Right. Because when they looked at the processing core, they don't find a charity project. They found a massively centralized platform backed by government supercomputers.
And what is the actual function of that machinery? I mean, if it's not just hosting news articles for people to read, what is it actually doing when a user logs on?
It's a drill.
A drill.
It is actively designed to bore encrypted, untraceable tunnels straight through the heart of other nations' sovereign networks.
Wow.
But we have to ask why. Why build a drill? The report argues the U.S. government has finally realized that controlling data flow is the ultimate geopolitical tool of the 21st century.
And this is the part that I found, well, a bit cynical, but strategically fascinating from the report's perspective. It's not just about letting information into these countries. It's about making sure data flows out to the right places.
Precisely. Look at the broader context of what's happening globally. We are seeing a world where nations from Asia to Europe are building their own national intranets.
Right.
They are building sovereign data centers. They want to keep their citizens' data within their own borders, processed by their own local laws.
They want control.
Yes. And the United States views this as an existential threat to what the report calls Silicon Valley's platform hegemony.
So if everyone builds their own local version of the internet or their own sovereign cloud, then companies like Google, Meta, and X, they lose their global grip.
They lose the user base. And more importantly, they lose the data. If the data stays in France or Brazil or India, it doesn't monetize in California.
Okay, so how does freedom.gov solve that for them?
The report explicitly states that freedom.gov is an attempt to lock global users inside the American information ecosystem. It's built to prevent data leakage to rival platforms. By giving people this tool to bypass their local internet restrictions, the U.S. is essentially ensuring that the data pipeline keeps routing straight back to American servers.
That puts a whole new spin on the name, doesn't it?
It really does.
It's not just freedom. The report calls it a forced data pipeline. It's presented to the user as a human rights tool. Here is your freedom. But in reality, it's a tether.
It's a customer acquisition strategy disguised as foreign policy.
Man.
And that's the definition of algorithmic diplomacy. It's not about issuing a stern political statement at the UN anymore. It's about injecting encrypted protocols directly into the infrastructure of your rivals to ensure your tech companies stay dominant.
Action, not word.
Action, not word.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Okay, so we have established this is a tool for dominance. Now, normally when we talk about bypassing censorship or internet freedom tools, my mind instantly goes to the usual suspects, you know, authoritarian regimes, places where the internet is heavily monitored.
That is the natural assumption. You think of this being deployed in rogue states to help dissidents organize.
Right. But here is where the Tekin report takes a hard left turn. And I actually had to reread this section twice to make sure I was getting it.
Yeah, the twist.
The analysts highlight that the biggest friction, the most intense diplomatic conflict over freedom.gov, isn't with a dictatorship at all. It's with the European Union.
This is the twist that really defines the current geopolitical moment we are in. In fact, the report mentions that the official unveiling of the project was actually postponed at the Munich Security Conference.
Really? Why?
Because of the massive diplomatic fallout behind the scenes with Germany and France.
But Europe and the U.S. are allies. Why would a freedom tool cause a massive fight with Brussels?
Because of what the report terms the regulation war. Over the last few years, the EU has been incredibly aggressive with digital legislation. You have the Digital Services Act, the DSA, and the Digital Markets Act, the DMA.
Right. I remember the headlines for those. Billions of dollars in fines for not moderating content correctly or for data privacy violations. The EU is basically trying to become the world's digital referee.
Exactly. The EU uses legislative power. They pass laws to control content, sometimes framing it as fighting fake news or hate speech, and they demand data sovereignty.
Meaning they want European data processed on European soil.
Yes. They actively want to strip the structural power away from Silicon Valley.
And freedom.gov, what? It just ignores that legislation.
It nullifies it. That is the exact word the report uses. Nullifies.
Wow.
By releasing this tool, Washington is sending a very brazen message to Brussels. They are saying, if you try to restrict our platforms with your laws, we will simply give your citizens a technical tool to tunnel right out of your jurisdiction.
Wait, play that out for me. Walk me through how that actually looks for a user. If I'm sitting in Paris and the EU blocks a certain feature on X because it violates the DSA, or they restrict a news site because it's non-compliant,
you just turn on the freedom.gov protocol, and suddenly, digitally speaking, you are located in the U.S.
Okay.
You are accessing the internet under U.S. First Amendment protections, bypassing the EU regulators entirely. It effectively renders local European laws obsolete.
That is wild. It's literally using code to beat the law.
The report frames it as coding power versus legislative power. And in this specific battle, code moves faster than bureaucracy.
Code always moves faster.
Right. It is a direct violation of European digital sovereignty, according to the analysts, but it's done in a way that is incredibly hard to police. It's technically an act of hostility, but it's wrapped up in the flag of liberty.
Well, let's talk about that hard to police aspect, because I'm thinking if I'm the EU or any sovereign government and I want to block a VPN, I just find the IP address and hit block. We've seen countries do this for years.
Mm-hmm.
Why is freedom.gov any different? The report calls this section a technical autopsy of the network, which implies this is something radically new.
This is where we really get into the weeds of how the internet actually functions. The report makes it crystal clear that this isn't a standard VPN. It's not using legacy protocols like OpenVPN or WireGuard.
Because those older ones have signatures, right? A firewall can look at the traffic and say, aha, that looks like a VPN connection.
Exactly. Standard censorship systems use something called deep packet inspection, or DPI.
DPI.
Right. They look inside the data packets traveling across the network. And even if they can't read the actual message because it's encrypted, they can still tell what kind of traffic it is based on its shape.
So the firewall says this is a VPN, or this is a Tor connection.
Yeah.
And they drop the connection.
Yes. But freedom.gov beats DPI entirely.
Yeah.
It relies on a concept called polymorphic routing, an AI-driven traffic obfuscation.
Okay, polymorphic routing. I mean, that sounds like something straight out of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Break that down for us. What is the AI actually doing to the data?
Think of it as a shape-shifting data stream. The AI manages the traffic in real time so that the data packets literally mutate their appearance.
Mutate.
Yes. To a sensor's DPI system, the traffic might look like a 4K video stream for Netflix 1 second.
Okay.
Then it shifts to look like a standard VoIP call, like a Zoom meeting. Then, a few seconds later, it looks like standard banking transaction data.
So the sensor looking at the network can't tell if I'm looking up forbidden political content or just, you know, watching a movie.
Precisely. It creates plausible deniability at the packet level. The censoring system cannot distinguish the forbidden tool from perfectly legitimate internet traffic.
That's incredible.
And the genius of it is, if you try to block the video stream coming from this tool, you might accidentally block actual video streams for your citizens.
It's hiding in plain sight.
Yes. And that leads to the second layer of defense, which the report argues is perhaps even more ingenious. It concerns the infrastructure itself.
Right. The report mentioned it uses decentralized nodes on hyperscale clouds. So this isn't just running on one server somewhere.
Definitely not. It's not running on a single server in a basement in Virginia that a government can just unplug or block. It's scattered across the massive infrastructures of AWS, Azure, and Cloudflare.
The major cloud providers.
Exactly. And this utilizes a strategy known in cybersecurity as collateral freedom.
Collateral freedom. I highlighted that term when I read it. It sounds super high stakes. What does that actually mean in practice?
It means using human shields, essentially, in a digital sense.
Wow.
If a government wants to block freedom.gov, they can't just block one single IP address. Because the traffic for this tool is mixed in with the traffic for banks, hospitals, streaming services, and major businesses that all use those exact same cloud providers.
So if I'm a regulator in a foreign country and I want to shut this tool down to block freedom.gov, I'd have to block Amazon Web Services or Microsoft Azure entirely.
Correct. And if you do that, you cripple your country's economy instantly. You break your own internet.
Your hospitals go offline.
Yes. Your banks stop working. Your logistics and supply chain networks just fail. That is the checkmate the report is talking about.
Checkmate.
The analysts say traditional firewalls are officially dead because of this architecture. The only way to stop freedom.gov is to burn your own village to save it.
That sounds like an absolute nightmare for any government trying to maintain regulatory control. It's basically holding the national economy hostage just to guarantee the data flow.
It is. And it's not just the EU feeling the heat. The report notes this has been a deafening wake-up call for nations worldwide. Everyone is suddenly realizing their borders are entirely porous.
So what happens now? It seems like this has shifted the conversation from just internet regulation to actual national survival, which brings us to arguably the heaviest concept in the report, sovereign compute.
Sovereign compute. It sounds like a military defensive doctrine, doesn't it?
It really does. Unpack that for us. What are the analysts saying here?
The report argues that as long as a nation is tethered to the global internet via foreign hardware and foreign protocols, things like AWS or Google Cloud, it is fundamentally defenseless.
Because the off switch belongs to someone else.
Exactly. If you don't own the data centers, the search engines, and the actual silicon chips inside your borders, the report says you are effectively a digital colony.
A digital colony. That is a very stark way to put it. So what is the global reaction to that realization? I mean, if you can't block the traffic without destroying your economy, what are these countries supposed to do?
You disconnect, or rather you rebuild everything from the ground up.
Internally.
Yes. We are seeing a massive global rush toward domestic data centers and internal search engines. Countries are realizing they need smart defense shields, not just static firewalls.
They need AI to fight AI.
Precisely. They are pouring billions into local hardware infrastructure, so they simply don't have to rely on American clouds anymore.
And this leads to the massive irony that the Tekken report points out. Freedom.gov is ostensibly about opening up the web, right? Uniting people under one free, open internet.
That's the presentation layer, yes.
But the reaction to it, the actual geopolitical result, is accelerating the exact opposite. The splinter net.
The balkanization of the internet, yes.
Yeah.
That is the true tragedy outlined here. By pushing so aggressively to penetrate foreign networks and maintain this platform hegemony, the U.S. is actually forcing those nations to build thicker, higher walls.
Right.
We are rapidly moving toward a future where the unified global web just shatters into islands, isolated, nationalized, hyper-defended networks.
It's like by trying to conquer the digital world with one universal system, they've inadvertently forced everyone else to build their own impenetrable fortresses.
Exactly. The more you push the algorithm, the more they fortify the hardware. And that dynamic brings us to the final verdicts from the Tech and Command Center. They break the implications down into three main takeaways that we really need to focus on to close out this deep dive.
Okay, let's run through them. What is the first verdict from the analysts?
Number one is the birth of algorithmic diplomacy. We have officially moved past traditional sanctions and diplomatic speeches. Governments are now clashing using code architecture and polymorphic tunnels.
War via network protocols.
Yes. If you aren't looking at the code, you simply aren't seeing the battlefield.
It's invisible warfare. Okay, what's the second verdict?
The shattering of the illusion of regulation. This is the core lesson from that EU conflict we discussed. Paper laws, things like the DSA, they are incredibly fragile when they go up against the raw hardware power and software agility of Silicon Valley.
Right.
If you can't control the underlying code, your laws are essentially just suggestions.
That has to be a hard pill to swallow for lawmakers around the world. You can pass all the bills and issue all the fines you want, but if the engineers can just dynamically bypass them in real time, the law doesn't matter.
It's a harsh reality.
And the third verdict.
The definitive death of the unified web. The report concludes that the global rush toward national internets and sovereign compute is now irreversible. The World Wide Web, as we knew it in the 2000s or the 2010s, is gone forever.
Man, it's a really sobering realization. You know, we grew up thinking the internet was this permanently borderless place where everyone could just talk to everyone else. But this report makes it crystal clear that was just a temporary phase.
It was a phase based entirely on trust and a lack of capability. Now the capabilities are finally there to weaponize the connection, so the trust is completely gone.
There is a quote at the very end of the Tekin analysis that I think sums this entire situation up perfectly. It says, in 2026, geographical borders only matter on paper maps. In reality, your border ends exactly where your code, protocols, and sovereign data centers end.
That is the new geopolitical reality. Sovereignty isn't about where your army is stationed anymore. It's about where your data is processed.
So we are left with this massive question mark hanging over the entire future of our digital interaction. On one side, we have freedom.gov pushing aggressively for a single unified data pipeline. And on the other, the rest of the world rushing to build these massive digital moats.
It forces every one of us to ask what we actually want for the future. Do we want a unified web that is ultimately controlled by a single hegemon? Or do we want a fragmented web where every single nation lives in its own isolated reality?
It really feels like a choice between a global monopoly and a fractured mirror.
And honestly, neither option looks particularly like the freedom we were promised in the early days of the internet.
No, it doesn't. And that is exactly where we are going to leave you today. As you go about your week, we want you to really think about that final provocation. In a world where freedom has just become a brand name for a data pipeline, and sovereignty requires disconnecting from the global grid entirely, does a true World Wide Web even exist anymore?
Right.
Or are we all just living in different digital fortresses, peering out at each other through the aeroslits?
It's a question every listener needs to deeply consider, because those digital walls are going up around us as we speak.
Thanks for diving deep with us today. Keep your protocols secure, and we'll catch you on the next one.